Auch ich möchte mich dem Dank anschließen meiner
Like the previous speakers, I'd also like to express my thanks to the team from the House of World Cultures and to Antje Eman. Thank you for doing all the groundwork for this conference and inviting us. I'd also like to thank Matthias Reimann, who assisted me with my moving image material and helped with the subtitles. I'd like to start with the principle whereby Jacques Rancière summed up the basic notion of a revolutionary pedagogical teacher. Education is like freedom. It is not given to you. You must take possession of it yourself. I'd like to start by showing an excerpt from the portrait of Peter Weiss. Here, Haroun Farrokhi asks a question which picks up on precisely this notion of self-education. So, Peter Weiss.
Vieles, was Sie selbst erfahren haben, auch auf eine andere Existenz und auf das Leben von Menschen, die Sie kennengelernt und studiert mhm. haben. Und das gehört ja wohl zur Methode des Schreibens immer, dass man Erfahrungen von sich selbst auf eine andere Figur überträgt, die in einer anderen Situation ist. Und dieses Erkämpfen müssen des Wissens, ist das eine eigene Erfahrung von Ihnen?
Im allerhöchsten Grad, denn diese Erfahrung begann in der Schulzeit schon und sie begann damit, dass meine Schulzeit sehr früh unterbrochen wurde, dass ich eigentlich gar keinen richtigen Schulgang hatte, sondern als 14-, 15-Jähriger aus der Schule herausgerissen wurde durch den Narzissmus und in eine Welt kam, in der ich überhaupt keine kaum existenzielle Grundlagen hatte, andere als dass ich mich meiner bürgerlichen Familie unterstelle und das täte, was die Eltern von mir sich erwünschten. Das habe ich ja schon ganz früh her schon kaum mehr getan, sondern ich wählte den Beruf des Malers und begann zu malen und kam damals schon in eine proletarische Existenz, in dem Künstler sein und gleichzeitig im Exil leben die Voraussetzung ist für ein völliges, eine Machtlosigkeit und ein Proletariat, das man schon fast ein Lumpenproletariat noch nennen konnte. Mhm. Also auf diese Weise hat der Ich-Erzähler doch sehr starke Berührungspunkte mit dem Ich, der das Buch schreibt, weil die Erfahrungen nicht so sehr unterschiedlich sind. Ich habe nicht so früh schon in der Fabrik gearbeitet, das kam erst dann in der Immigration in Schweden jahrelang, aber die Erfahrungen waren mir bekannt.
Aber es ist sicher ein anderer Zugang in Ihrem Interesse zur Kultur damals noch gewesen, als das Interesse an Kultur teilzunehmen für
natürlich,
die Proletarier der Arbeiterbewegung.
Natürlich hatte ich das große Privileg, dass ich schon als Kind immer in einem Haus aufwuchs, wo es Bücher gab und wo man, wo ich schon also vor 33 Mahagoni und die Drei-Groschen-Oper gehört hatte und wusste, wer Brecht war und schon erfahren hatte, wer Münzenberg war und Trotzki und Lenin. Das sind Dinge, die ich mir damals schon erlesen hatte. Nicht? Aber das ist klar, das ist ein großer Vorteil der Menschen gegenüber, die ich schildere, die aus einem Milieu kommen, wo es kaum Bücher gibt und wo auch der Zugang zu Büchern, der Zugang überhaupt zu Bibliotheken den meisten Menschen versperrt ist. Das müssen diese Menschen sich erobern. Sie müssen finden, sie müssen erfahren, dass es möglich ist, sich Kenntnisse zu verschaffen.
Haroun hatte ein besonderes Interesse für Autodidaktik.
Haroun had a particular interest in autodidacts and for people who were as much at home in the world of workers and craftspeople as in the sphere of art or literature. Peter Weiss was the son of a factory owner and through exile began very soon to live in a very working class fashion. He seemed to have found an elected affinity. It wasn't just the question of the access to knowledge, but also the method of research, which was very important for him in Weiss. Finding their way from painting and film to literature. The writer mentioned elsewhere in this conversation that as a documentary filmmaker, he'd collected lots of information, where the focus was on describing the milieu precisely in this conversation on realism and the aesthetic of resistance. Farocki was interested, on the one hand, in autobiographical sources for the novel, and in particular for the writer's mode of working. He commented in great detail and with great interest on his notebooks, sketches, and materials. His fascination related to the force of description with which Weiss described the roots of historic processes and could be observed from the perspective of the present. Farocki shot this conversation with Weiss in 1979, even before the publication of the third volume of the monumental novel addressed here. In this portrait, he emphasized in particular the points where Weiss touches on an awareness of historical contingency and the mediality of the narrative, the notion of re-narration, a form of presenting temporality and articulating experience. A few years ago, in the film Es stirbt allerdings ein jeder, shot by Renate Semé in 1975, but Holger Mainz shortly after Mainz's dramatic death during hunger strike, Harun Farocki comments as a contemporary witness, Sami's portrait is one in which Farocki addresses a whole host of different points of view. Before he starts to address Mainz, Farocki presents his own position. He says, I would like to try to talk about Holger in a way that does not produce interpretations, but simply to present a few facts. I'd like to present no appraisals which retrospectively could lead people to say, ah, this led to that or that led to the other. Only after this preamble does he start to talk about Holger Mainz, saying, I got to know Holger in 1966 at the entrance exam for the Film Academy. In this comment, Farocki describes what he had learned from Mainz about the field of the aesthetic and not yet understood at that time the conception of sound, for example, as advocated by Godard or Straub. On Mainz's film Oskar Langenfeld, Farocki said, I did not understand how radical something like this was back then either. Precise description, he concludes, means much more effort, and in the first instance exudes much more force than the many explanations that the left wing produces on everything. This aesthetic of description was used by Farocki in many of his own films, but not without at the same time calling into question the function and possibility of the depiction, very often within a relationship of tension between word and image. For Farocki, the precision of documentary observation is tied to the materiality of the recording. It would, however, be possible for the pre-filmic, the filmed performance, to be false. This is one possibility, the underpinning, but it's not possible for the cinematographic gesture itself to be false. The focus for Farocki was not to have as many details as possible of quotidian experience depicted as realistically as possible, but to produce a kind of presence of spirit which will open up scope for associations and memories. Filmic depiction is not just to open a window on the world. It's a kind of theatre of memory in which absent images can shimmer back into being. In his dialogue with Peter Weiss, Farocki talked about the topography of the culture of the workers' movement. What's important, he said, was to take those vanished, sunken elements, those no longer visible elements, and pick up on them once again. Through the articulation of the description, the aspect is the underpinning for the filmmaker's understanding of the world and his self-image, the filmic montage of ideas, an Eisenstein term which Farocki picks up on in Between Two Worlds, Two Wars. This is the central instrument to articulate these relationships in the essay film Zwischen zwei Kriegen, a film about the thrust of work. As we said in the credits, the focus is not on the pains and travails of the working day. Inspired by the theories of Alfred Sohn Reto's, Harun Farocki, as Thomas Alsasser told us yesterday, looks here at the political consequences of restructuring of the coal and steel industry in Germany, which was really in a deficit during the Weimar Republic, and at the same time looks at the economic conditions of production as the basis for the form of his film. In a sequence that lasted more than 4 minutes, the filmmaker very precisely showed technical processes of coke production in the Ruhrgebiet, which in 1927 led to the vanishing of small work, as it's called.
Ist die menschliche Arbeit so gut wie überflüssig geworden. Etwa 60 Ofenkammern bilden zusammen eine Batterie. Auf ihr fährt die Kohleneinfüllmaschine entlang. Die Deckel einer Ofenkammer werden geöffnet und eine Rutsche wird in sie hineingesenkt. Durch diese gleitet die Kohle in die Kammer. Die einzelne Ofenkammer ist etwa 10 Meter lang und 3 Meter hoch, aber sehr schmal, manchmal nur 50 Zentimeter. Die einzelne Ofenkammer ist gebaut aus feuerfesten Steinen, deren Wände von Gas beheizt in hellrot erglühen. Wenn der Koks gar ist, nach 25 oder 30 Stunden tritt die Ausdrückmaschine in Tätigkeit. Diese Maschine ist anzusehen wie ein großer Finger, ausgestreckt aus einer großen Faust. Auf Schienen läuft er neben der Batterie. Der Finger, ein mannsdicker Stahlstempel, drückt den Koks, der im Ofen zu einer Art Kuchen zusammengebacken ist, durch die Ofentür auf der anderen Seite heraus.
Der historische Text wird zu dieser Einstellung.
The historic text is not just added to the sequence of shots in order to allocate a name and a function to the processes of coke production, which will not be possible to read from the images otherwise. The juxtaposition of word and image, opening up a time frame of 50 years here, makes clear the long life and vitality of a mode of production. At the end, the text module from off-screen refers to the aesthetic dimension of the filmic registrator of industrial architecture. The large cloud of steam, die große Wolke Wasserdampf, which we see here being paid tribute to in one single shot, would be actually later the focus of an entire James Benning film. Farocki's conception of realism becomes apparent here, and that's related not just to Brecht's dictate of the lack of expressivity of a photograph of the Kruppwerke, which tells you almost nothing about this institute. Instead, the focus is much more on the enigmatic way in which art responds to the puzzling nature of the real. The pendants to this small industrial symphony appears in this film in a multi-minute traveling shot running along a factory wall right up to the large collecting tube, which is a symbol of economic rationalization of heavy industry. From off-screen, you can hear the voice of the barn of industry, using abstract buzzwords of that era, such as the servitude of interest payments. Now, does this long travelling shot here show the nature of economic relationships? Certainly it does. The photographer in the film says that factory walls are impenetrable, insurmountable, enclosing capitalist rationale of production. But the collage text of the barn of industry picks up on something of the knowledge that Haraki derived from Sohn Rethel about the connections between the economy, National Socialism, and war. In his later films, in which he on the one hand looked at the archaeology of contemporary image dispositives, and on the other hand engaged in framework analyses of societal role plays, Faraki found his way to other artistic forms of political analysis. Helmut Faber noted recently, in order to enter his investigation of the use of technical images with the means of technical images, Faraki had to move away from the Brechtian model and from its confidence. The latter holds true not just for the essay-style compilation films and installations, but also for the documentary framework analyses, which no longer wanted to look at a utopia or decode mythologies, but to look at the set of rules which makes it possible to say, or indeed not say, certain things within society. Haroon described himself as a school dropout. He was a convinced autodidact, a fan of St. Joan of the Stockyards, which he saw in the world premiere. When Brecht was not on the school syllabus, he loved gangster films and westerns. In his autobiographical text, Autobiographie ohne Liebe Wandern, based on a mnemonic from a Berlin film projector, he wrote, "I left for once and for all, moved to West Berlin, did small jobs to get through, and lived in all kinds of cruddy flats. I went to evening class and did my school leaving exam. Last time I met Faraki, he talked to me about that evening school and about how important it was for him to catch up and to do his school leaving exam all those years later than he would normally have done it. The son of an Indian doctor, he was still underage when he left his rigid upbringing. To educate himself in a self-determined way in his elected home here in Berlin. Again and again, his films demonstrate how it is possible to attain knowledge despite highly difficult circumstances. His earlier films looked at the notion of revealing the reality concealed behind external appearances. But in Zwischen zwei Kriegen, we see this. We look at the question of the false aspects of the society of spectacle in the spirit of Guy Debord, presenting this as part of reality, as we see in Ein Bild. Jacques Rancière addressed the pedagogical revolutionary Joseph Jacquetot, and underlining that those who actually know nothing can attain equal status if they recognize how to appropriate something that they do not yet know. This teaching is based on the moral of notion of a communication in which the other is recognized as an intellectual subject capable of understanding what another intellectual subject wishes to say to him. What is essential here is that equality is not the objective, it's the point of departure, as Rancière put it. I would say that Faraki's form of observation is based on this kind of presumption and assumption of equality, both in the gesture of filming and in the work of the montage. This deeply democratic principle relates both to the people in front of the camera and to the audiences. That doesn't mean that Faraki's direct documentary film do not have a point of view, but rather their endeavors and their forms seek to relate to the process of thinking and the work of the images. The principle that Verrocchi presents serves to reveal the underpinning of his own fieldwork, the structure of a film, its idea as a process of appropriation of knowledge, and to make those comprehensible and intelligible. An essential basis is also mediation of his encyclopedic analogies and the epistemological matrix of his visual analyses. This taps in again and again to a film culture, a real film buff film culture, which Verrocchi did not learn about in school, not even in film school, but appropriated for himself. In a dialogue on essay film that I conducted with him last year, he said he must go through materials again and again in order to attain a thought. You can learn a great deal from the compositional rules of film, including industrial story film, narrative films in the commercial frame. A great deal can be learned from that. I'd like to show you a clip now on the training of the unemployed.
Sie hatten natürlich das Problem, dass Sie nicht unbedingt einem kompetenten Bankmenschen gegenüber saßen. Geht halt nicht bei uns, ne? Wir können nicht überall kompetent sein. Insofern, Sie waren so ein bisschen schnippisch, hatte ich den Eindruck. Schnippisch. Waren Sie das aus diesem Grund oder war das unbewusst zufällig?
Ja, das Lächeln war, konnte mir nicht verkneifen.
Haben Sie das auch so empfunden?
Ja.
Das ist alles gefährlich. Ne? Das wirkt dann so ein bisschen arrogant.
Mhm, zum Beispiel?
Der Fick. Also im Abend anfänglich noch schlimmer, fand ich. Das sieht man dann auch.
Ja. Ja, Frau Maas, bei uns steht also wieder ein recht umfangreicher Einstellungszyklus an. Wir sind also als aufstrebendes Bankinstitut wie jedes Jahr auf der Suche nach talentvollen, nach talentierten Nachwuchskräften, die dem Bankgeschäft was abgeben können. Das Bankgeschäft hat ja viele Facetten.
War Harun Verrocchi persönlich?
Harun Verrocchi himself was not an unknowing teacher or master in the spirit of the figure of exiled revolutionary Jacques Otto, of whom Jacques Rancière writes. His films were nonetheless underpinned by a similar interest in a democratic matter, equitable distribution of knowledge. In his precise detailed observations of social locuses, aspects of dissensus emerge, born from the capacity of the man in the street, without qualities in a sense to criticise what seems so obvious in what is visible, and to open up new topographies of the possible, to cite Rancière. As you've just seen, he used footage from negotiations, expert tables, training courses to analyse the world. An analysis of his montage reveals the places where the hierarchy of speakers and discourses enters into a crisis. The vanishing point of his observational films lie in moments in which it becomes apparent to what extent emancipated people can act in an emancipatory fashion. For example, on a young school leaver, as we just saw, reveals the discursive dispositive within which practice for an interview is actually framed. She turns the demands on their head to appear as fully as possible by referring to the false game of the trainers. They're performing a role that is not genuine, seeking to pretend to be the employers. For Harun, the focus was not to assert the truth in his work, for example, on capitalist modes of production or the use of surveillance technologies. Precise descriptions of the present world, that was his goal, combined with an attempt to be bold enough to produce history from what exists in the world today. We see the critical work of montage, participating in the work of perception and memory of a film. That is the essence of it.
Pause.
Thank you. We will have a 1 hour break now. Thank you very much for your presentations this morning from all of the speakers. So, see you at 2 for the second panel. Thank you.